Okay, so thanks for the nice introduction. So one of the topics that we've been interested in over the last maybe 1.5 years or so has been connections in the sense of hybrid systems between AMO and solid state. And I somehow felt that I should talk about these things here.
That one should also work, not by now.
It also works, or? So. This one here? Oh, wow. It's one of these famous single photon. The point is. Okay, good. Okay, so since most of the people here are actually solid state physicists and I'm an AMO person, I wanted to speak a little bit about work that we have done recently on connecting AMO to solid state systems, or to say hybrid systems. And I will do this now in the context of this optonanomechanics. To say that at the moment this is a field which is mainly driven by experiment, so at this point you're sort of putting on the head as a theorist, as a useful theorist, to try to develop ideas that maybe could be done in the lab and pave the way and provide ideas, you know, what to do in this context on the experimental side. In doing these things, of course, we also have certain applications in mind, and I would like to, the first maybe 10 or 12 slides, give you an overview of why I find these things interesting and what sort of the bigger picture of the whole story and where it gets interesting, maybe also from the theory point of view. I guess that you're not the audience that needs much introduction here. When you talk about solid state systems, we had all of these talks about spin qubits and so on, nitrogen vacancies, and then we had the AMO side here. I guess that AMO has been a little bit underrepresented, but at least during the time that I was here, I belong to this camp here. And it's actually quite amusing to see that if you followed for the last 15 years all of these ideas of building quantum computers and so on solid state and AMO, I mean, the goals, of course, is the same. You know, you would like to get coherent control on the single quantum level, much larger than dissipation, and all of the fundamental aspects and applications, of course. And what's sort of amusing is the fact that actually we have very many common concepts. So when we talk about, for example, nuclear spin and also spin in the context of solid state, I mean, actually this is exactly what we also do on the AMO side when we talk about trapped ions or about atoms that have internal states that are, again, you know, nuclear spin states or spin states and so on that serve as a quantum memory. And many of the ideas of doing gate operations also have some some are very related. So both of these things are independent systems, you know, with their own pluses and minuses, in particular on the solid state side, there's a huge zoo of possibilities. The question to be asked is now this, if you can somehow combine AMO system and solid state system so that at the end you have an advantage, and not only a disadvantage by combining systems that are maybe experimentally somehow incompatible. So the question is how to develop a coherent quantum interface between solid state and AMO system, sort of as a basic building block. And as I said, the goal is to combine advantages and hopefully not disadvantages, and benefit from complementary toolboxes that one can do in both of these systems. So AMO systems, of course, are known in this case to provide, for example, long coherence times. You can really manipulate them very well. And so the question is, for example, to use AMO systems maybe as a quantum memory in the context of solid state and so on. So the question to be asked is what this quantum interface or this quantum data bus should actually look like. And I would like to discuss now examples that we have done over the last, as I said, maybe 1.5 years in the context of combining atoms, sort of coupling atoms to nanomechanical systems. Now, nanomechanics is, of course, a field that has been, sort of exploded on the experimental side. And in a symbolic way, this is indicated here. This is something that I stole from a Nature paper from the Yale group, Jack Harris, who talks about the membrane as one of these examples of nanomechanical oscillators where you couple nanomechanical motion to optics. And this is this field of optonanomechanics. And since I'm a quantum optics person from the optics side, I mean, this is also something which is relatively close to my heart. And the question is, I mean, how do we now make quantum interfaces between these systems here? In having atoms talk to, for example, nanomechanical systems, The obvious way of doing this would be to have photons as a data bus. You could also, in principle, use direct interactions. But the nice thing about photons is that we are asking here the question that you would like to get long-range interactions between atoms and, for example, these nanomechanical systems. Now, on the nanomechanics side, of course, what you have is just an oscillator. This oscillator will, of course, be damped. The oscillator will be coupled to an environment, will be heated. There's all of these questions about ground state cooling over here and so on. On the atomic physics side, we have this whole toolbox that we can talk about. You know, do we want the coupling to internal atomic states? Do we want to couple to maybe emotional states of the atoms? And so again, as I said before, the challenge is to develop for these kind of a hybrid systems a quantum interface. And as I said before, I will focus now on using photons as a data bus. Well, I've stolen a few nice figures from some of these experimental talks that I heard that indicate these, you know, micro nanomechanical oscillators. And with Dirk Baumeister here in the audience, I mean, that's of course something I shouldn't really elaborate much on. They know much more. The question is, no, these are harmonic oscillators and you would like to go quantum. And as I said before, this whole field of optonanomechanics, there's also electronanomechanics, is a field under very strong experimental development, where the goal at the moment of this whole community is to see quantum effects, I guess, in the widest sense. And it's sort of following a little bit the footsteps of what we had in atomic physics when we talked about, for example, trapped ions. With trapped ions, you know, the first goal was, well, you would like to trap a single ion. Well, have a single nanomechanical oscillator is kind of easy, I guess. Yeah? Single trapped ion, and then you would like to couple these ions. You would like to cool them to the ground state. And then as the next step came entanglement, and then these ideas about quantum computing and so on. And I guess there will be a similar, you know, history probably over here. The challenge at the moment is to do this ground state cooling by optical means, or maybe by some other means, or maybe just trivially by coupling an oscillator directly to a heat bath, which is very cold, and the frequency of the oscillator could actually be very high. Okay, so the basic underlying coupling that one has in optonanomechanics is, of course, the radiation pressure force. Turns out that this radiation pressure force, which is simply the recoil that you have, one of these is now sort of a mirror which is moving in this symbolic picture, is actually very small. The way to enhance it is to shine in laser light and therefore enhance it. The disadvantage in this context is that from a theoretical point of view, you map these things onto models that are actually Gaussian models, and so they are, from a theoretical point of view, maybe not so challenging to actually treat. But I guess there are some ideas around to make this radiation pressure force per single photon large to some extent. And I see a lot of future in this question, but that's not the experimental status at the moment. Here's a sort of a zoo of these examples of what systems have looked at with different names that are listed down here. And I guess I should not elaborate on these things. These are, you know, for me just now harmonic oscillators that have some damping and that are coupled to thermal reservoirs. And as I said, our goal is now to couple these things to atoms. Okay, and the question is how and why. Okay. Well, here's this list why, you know, it may be interesting. And the first thing is that how to observe and also prepare non-classical quantum states of oscillators and entangled oscillators. Well, there's been a long history of ideas to couple, for example, these oscillators to some other degrees of freedom. And of course, solid-state systems is a different form of two-level systems, like NV centers, Cooper pair boxes. These ideas have been around for some time. As I said, I would like to talk about coupling these things to single atoms and in atomic physics kind of a sense. And well, what do atoms actually provide? Atoms provide this what we call AMO toolbox for the preparation. This could be optical bumping, for example, or laser cooling, coherent manipulation, and also measurement of quantum systems. And this atomic toolbox is extremely well developed, and I think it sort of underlies the reason why actually atomic physics has been pretty good in, you know, in this quantum information context. So the challenge is then to make this AMO toolbox available for the readout, cooling, and also control of these mechanical oscillators. And of course, then also develop maybe something like hybrid quantum systems for measuring forces, for example. Or at the end, of course, there's this big goal of testing quantum mechanics for microscopic systems. And these mechanical oscillators, well, I guess it's also quite obvious. And a local probe, sub-wavelength for manipulation of atomic system, this would be going the other way around. Or then also this idea of engineering long distance interactions between atoms via oscillators. I'll say a few words about these things then afterwards. The question is now, I mean, how do we get this kind of a coupling? You can see what the basic problem is, and I'll afterwards come actually exactly to these points that are listed over here in terms of calculations that we have done that hopefully might even make it into the lab quite soon. So the goal is now couple atoms and to couple it strongly in the sense that you would like the coherent coupling that you have between an atom, single atom, or maybe many atoms to a mechanical oscillator. You want this to be strong by being much larger than any of the decoherence mechanism that you have. You would like to couple, of course, to a single resonator mode, and as I said, with low damping. And the big challenge, as you can see, is this, that when you speak about talking about coupling the motion of atoms to the mechanical oscillator, it's the fact that you have here the square root of the masses that appears, and this is a quantity that typically is something like 10 to the minus 7 to 10 to the minus 4 if you take the square root. So this means that a priori, all of these couplings, by coupling sort of a tiny object like a single atom to a big object, which is nanomechanical micro-size oscillator, that this big mismatch in terms of the masses makes these couplings here very strong, very weak. So omega A is sort of the eigenfrequency of this oscillator of atoms, or maybe over here, which should be equal to the one of the nanomechanical oscillator. Well, there's different ways around it. One is, for example, that you can use cavities as mediators, and I will afterwards show you one example. This is work that we have done with people at Caltech last year, and they are sort of setting up experiments along these lines. I'll explain this afterwards. Or a second very obvious way is that you try to go from a single atom to many atoms, getting a collective enhancement of these couplings by the square root of the number of atoms that you have. And Philipp Teutlein, who is now moving to Basel, I mean our chairman's home university, he is planning an experiment along these lines, not using cavities. And I will tell you a little bit what the basic ideas are behind this thing. So in this sense, you know, either many atoms or then using cavities, and cavities would sort of be levers to mediate this kind of a coupling. There's an infinite number of people who worked on these things here in the context of, you know, ions, atoms, you know, polar molecules, and so on. Let me not try to go over this list, but let me rather start out by giving you a little bit, the bigger picture, you know. And I think in thinking about these things, one should first of all ask the question, you know, you want to talk to experimentalists, what's realistic right now? What could they do, you know, on the scale of maybe a few years? But then also for theorists, I think it's very important to ask the question, you know, what's the future behind all of these things, and where will this thing go? Will this be simply nice experiments, and at the end of the day you walk home and say, well, great, or is there something deeper behind it? I think the answer at the moment is this, that in terms of these realistic experiments today, I guess they are challenging, but they can be done, and they will show you afterwards, you know, what kind of ideas are around. The future, there's some ideas around. I'm not entirely sure yet about this thing, but I will give you a few ideas where I personally believe that this field is going. And I guess that's really a point of general discussions about nanomechanics per se. So we worked on a few papers. You know, this is a paper that came out now a few months ago, done with the Caltech group and also the University of Munich. Philipp Deutlein was also involved here in Innsbruck, so it was a huge team of people. We started talking to each other, and then we sort of found out that we had similar ideas, and then we wrote this thing up in the theory proposal. But the challenge or the question was here, sort of the ultimate thing that you could do in quantum optics, namely ask, well, let me take a high Q cavity, okay? And let me use this high Q cavity as a way to couple strongly the motion of a single atom to, for example, a membrane representing a nanomechanical oscillator inside of a cavity. And I mentioned here before that we have huge mass differences between, of course, a single atom and this thing over here. And the idea is now to use the strong cavity couplings and the high finesse of the cavity in order to overcome this very weak coupling, so that at the end of the day, we are able to go to a regime of strong coupling, where the coupling between the motion of the atom becomes much stronger than any of the other channels that would correspond to heating of these atoms by spontaneous emission, you know, coupling to a thermal bath, and I mean, there's an infinite number of things that I will afterwards sort of outline. And the answer at the moment is that with existing experimental parameters, it seems that this coherent coupling can be made maybe a factor of 10 larger than all of the experimental kind of decoherence channels that one has. And Jeff Kimball is actually very interested in setting up an experiment along these lines. You can see, why it is Jeff Kimball? Well, Jeff is the guy who has single atoms inside of high Q cavities, and sticking a membrane inside is something which is experimentally then not too hard. And as a matter of fact, he has done recent experiments where he has put membranes inside and a cavity that's about maybe 50 micrometer long, where he's able to get strong coupling of the single atom here to this cavity. So this is something that maybe we'll find an experimental realization sometime. But it's sort of the ultimate challenge, you know, coupling a single atom to a relatively huge, in this scale, you know, mechanical oscillator context.
Might be about coupling its motional state.
At this moment, I'm talking about coupling the motional state. There's actually a version of this thing that also talks about internal states. Actually, the coupling to internal states turns out to be stronger, the one for this motion. So this is sort of the more challenging part, and for some historical reason, we, you know, looked at this problem here. There's another work that we did together. You can see that this is all these famous experimentalists here on this list. It's quite impressive. you know, this is Eugene Polzig and Markus Astlmeier here. Again, work done together with Clemens Hammerer. Clemens Hammerer and my group was really the one who was sort of pushing these things and who was leading the subgroup working on these kind of ideas here. So you can see that, you know, this has the ingredient, not only that we talk about opto-nano mechanics that we have here again, cavity coupled to, so to say, an oscillating mirror, which represents this nano-mechanical oscillator. So this is this opto-nano mechanical system. The question here was, can you, by shining laser light, and this sort of follows ideas that were done in Eugene Polzig's lab for two atomic ensembles. You know, he entangled atomic ensembles, and he talks about quantum memory, using atomic ensembles for quantum memory of light and so on. So this is a scheme which is known in the context of atoms, and which has been done by Eugene Polzig, where you shine light. Now, in this case, first to a nanomechanical oscillator. In his case, it was always two atomic ensembles that he had over here, but it turns out that the same story also goes through if you replace one of these atomic ensembles by a nanomechanical oscillator. They take light and they shine it through this thing. And clearly, I mean, this system over here is an oscillator, so it's a continuous variable system. But we know, of course, also that atomic ensembles, the internal states of atomic ensembles, are also a continuous variable system, because what you do in the atomic ensemble is this, that you take your collective spin, you put it in a certain direction, and then, you know, if you linearize the angular momentum collective commutation relation, you sort of again get canonical commutation relations. And using the Faraday effect, Eugene Polzig has shown that such a system, in the case of two ensembles, by making a QED measurement over here, leads to entanglement of these systems. So the same story can then also be done with an opto-nanomechanical oscillator here, coupled to an atomic ensemble here. And this is making EPR correlations in the continuous variable sense over a long distance. So these things can be, you know, inside of a fridge here. This can be a cryogenic environment where these things can be outside. So this is a long distance coupling, establishing EPR channels, so EPR correlations, you know, over this distance. And as I said, you can see the ingredients here, and I mean here theory, and then here an expert who was responsible for this part. It's Markus Astlmeier, Eugene Polzig, sort of being the guy who knows everything about the atomic ensembles. And the conclusion at the end is that actually something like this works out and seems to be very promising. So I guess that this is again an experiment that could be done, establishing EPR correlations so over long distance.
Peter,
Are
there problems with? I'm thinking of this thing you just said about part of it being, say, in a cryostat, another part of it being out of a cryostat, which suggests maybe that the light has to pass through windows at various temperatures, including room temperature glass. Mm-hmm. Does passing these beams, which contain this quantum information, through some medium, but that the medium is at room temperature and shaking, I guess, disrupt in some way or decohere the quantum information?
We asked this question Markus Astlmeier, you know, who does exactly these kind of experiments, and at the end he said that he felt that this was not a concern. Yeah. So I'm just passing on this information. I mean, this is an experimental question, so I'm
okay.
So I mean, Markus said that he was sure that he could exactly solve this problem. We talked about that.
Once
lots of physical focus.
Okay, I don't remember the details now, but he simply said that he could do these things and it was not really an issue.
I think the simple idea, like in this case, is just this one mirror which is, you know flexible.
No, but we talk about the cryostat over here.
Yeah, so yeah. You know, the other thing is just to feel the index of diffraction, right? You know, feel the index of diffraction.
Yes.
The experiments of Eugene Pulsey, he has atomic cells which are at room temperature, and the light goes through the atomic cells and nothing happens, right?
I don't think that the cryostatic element changes anything here. Yeah.
Okay. But it's transparent, I don't see why it would
So moving laterally kind of relative to the
that's
light doesn't seem like it would do
that's
anything,
right?
Like
that's right.
Yes. Well, if it's a normal incidence, that would be true. You have to be still careful, but I think that it could be arranged.
Yeah. This is exactly what Marco said. So, okay, and then here's a third example that I will afterwards just mention a little bit. So I will mainly talk about, I'll give you a summary of this thing. I will not talk about this part over here. This would take a little bit longer. And some of you have heard these stories by Eugene Bolzik, and so I don't want to repeat this here. The experiment that Philip Teutlein, who, as I said, is moving now to Daniel Loss's home university in Basel, wants to do is something which is actually a little bit more challenging, and it's also quite interesting. It's asking the question, over here we are using always cavities. I mean, this is cavity here, and of course here the radiation pressure force is enhanced by sort of, you know, having light bounce around very often and therefore adding up the contribution from the radiation pressure force to something which at the end of the day gives you a large cupping. Here the question is this, can you do a free space cupping? And somehow this whole question is related to these atomic physics experiments with optical lattices. I guess many of you know these experiments. You take two counterpropagating laser lights, you can do atoms inside of optical lattices. And the history sort of went like this, that in the early days, maybe 15 years ago, what people did was they loaded from a magneto-optical trap atoms inside of an optical lattice. They did laser cooling. Of course, it was sort of independent laser cooling events over here. The new story now here is that you would like now this lattice to become a moving lattice by reflecting it off from a nano oscillator. You know, here's a little mirror attached. This thing reflects here, so this becomes then a shaky mirror. And you know, this vibrating mirror then will of course talk to the center of mass motion of all of these atoms over here. Again, this is over a long, long distance. So this is outside here, and this is in the cryo environment. And the question is again, can you, for example, you know, the most naive thing would be, can you do laser cooling, you know, with 10 to the 8 atoms that you have over here in the sense of a standard optical molasses in an optical lattice over here? Can you do laser cooling of this? And the answer seems to be yes, you can go almost to the ground state, not completely. I'm not saying that this is the greatest way to cool down a system like this. I think it is very interesting from the point of view that many of you know probably that we talk about Hubbard models here. In the case of optical lattice, and this is sort of coupling Hubbard models to a global sort of collectively coupled harmonic oscillator, and this may be a new engineering element that would that one could actually add to optical lattice experiments to do something interesting. So it's a little bit like putting optical lattices inside of cavities, except that this is now a different system here and the frequencies. So it has the same flavor as talking about Hubbard models coupling in the context of, for example, cavity QED.
Any
questions? Yeah.
It seems to me that if you wanted to move that whole lattice, you would need to move both mirrors.
There's no second mirror over here. I mean, there's a laser where this thing comes. So this is a continuum. No, this is for me a continuum. This comes from infinity in here.
Oh.
Okay. So this is not using a cavity. This is free space coupling. You're asking, can I couple a bunch of atoms over a long distance, you know, via simply this optical lattice? So what this thing does, it simply moves back and forth here. So this means that these atoms will be shaking in there. So if the atoms are shaking, you can, for example, laser cool them. And so there's a back action. I will afterwards write down some theory for these things, okay? Actually, this is pretty interesting here for a person like me who's a quantum optics theorist, because there's well, we will afterwards see. There's a quantum stochastic Schrödinger equation with time delays that comes out, and it's something where it's a little bit challenging. It's an interesting problem. I'll mention afterwards how this goes. I give you a naive picture, which actually turns out to be wrong, but gives the right result. And then afterwards, I give you the proper treatment. Okay, but I'll do this a little bit later.
So the typical distance is
Well, this could be, I don't know. Whatever it is, yeah. Okay, so let me come back to this question. What I told you right now is sort of no ideas that we worked on, and we believe that these things actually could be done in the lab, more or less with the numbers that we have available right now in all of these experimental setups. Let me make a few comments about where I see the future of all of this. You know, this is sort of, you put on your hat as a useful theorist and you collaborate with these experimentalists, and I think that if these experiments could be done, it would be fantastic. It would be very exciting. So where do I see these things going? I have sort of two remarks here. The first one is that my personal feeling is, and I guess that Ignacio had this idea sort of independent of us, was that I feel that nanomechanics maybe could be done in a somewhat different way, and sort of more the atomic physics way, because at the moment all of this cryo stuff that I know the solid state people don't seem to be afraid, but every AMO experimentalist that you talk to hears the word cryo sort of, you know, get some wet hands, it seems to be. The question is if some of these nanomechanics could not be done more the optics way, and we thought about levitating nanomechanical oscillator, which in the most simple sense would be simply a sphere, you know, that could be, for example, in a standing light wave, say in a cavity, that would be sort of, this would be like the old story of a tweezer as discovered, as discussed by Ashkin a long time ago, and this is of course very standard. But what it now really buys you, you know, is this, that instead of this solid-state cryogenic setup, which is really a true solid-state experiment, where you have supports and you have a finite temperature of the support of your cantilevers over here, you, the remarks to be made is this, that of course, whenever you have clamping over here, this will introduce additional damping. So from a fundamental point of view, you know, it would be very nice to eliminate this clamping here and also eliminate the fact that if you got a finite temperature over here, you will be injecting phonons over here when you cool this thing down to lower temperatures than what the surrounding is. And so if you go the AMO way, you take this old story of this classical trapping of dielectric spheres in the most simple case, which is known to be very low damping. In a paper with actually Derek Jung, I mentioned this afterwards, there was an analysis of all of these corresponding damping forces. And the question is, can you go with this system sort of quantum? Hopefully, and I guess the answer is even yes, but you can do a room temperature experiment where you cool, in this case it's just talking about center of mass over here, using a self-cooling to the ground state by again injecting, you know, there would be a trapping beam laser and there would be a cooling beam laser, and therefore also approach somehow some fundamental damping limits. And as I said, here this is just discussing center of mass. I mean, there's papers along these lines, I'll mention this now in a minute. I would say that the real question to be asked is this, can we actually extend these kind of ideas of making a quantum tweezer or going to the quantum regime in a room temperature environment, like AMO physics always does it, by cupping, for example, internal modes. So think of somehow a composite structure that is not only a sphere, but somehow, you know, is maybe something like this, you know, maybe even it has some NV centers or whatever inside over here. And then cupping and also cooling now here to this mechanical motion, but at the same time also these NV centers over here. And well, here's a paper that we actually put in the archive, and there was a similar paper by Ignacio that was sort of independent. I mean, I was very surprised to find out, but maybe that's always true. That okay, where. Essentially, Derek Jung, who was one of Misha's students, now working at Caltech, you know, with this whole group of experimentalists, and Jeff Kimble and Oscar Paint are very serious about actually trying this experiment, where one worked out the numbers, you know, what the oscillation frequencies are, the optical gap depths, and in particular, discussing all of the noise sources, like, you know, background gas collisions, scattered photons, black body radiation, and so on, and then coming up with schemes that, for example, you know, based on these numbers that come out here, how to get entangled photons and entanglement of two spheres, for example, and having a squeezed motion of spheres and getting, for example, squeezed light out. To some extent, this...
Can I just make sure I understood the last few graphs? Maybe it's continued on this one, but the idea of this three-pronged thing, yeah, was that if that thing is trapped, but it has internal degrees of freedom.
That's right. It would be sort of a very fluffy motion.
Cool that.
That's right.
By cooling the center of mass motion.
Well, you couple the whole thing, you know, and so we have, yes, okay. So there will be oscillations over here, for example. We know that you have an optical trapping field, and the question is now, you know, can I be clever by shining in an appropriate cooling laser, you know, that via the standing waves, you know, couples to this object in such a way that I'm coupling to the center of mass as well as to the internal degrees of freedom of this thing in a way that I can cool and manipulate them, you know, and I get sort of, you know, there will be different mode couplings over here, and we have some ideas along these lines, but okay. Nothing that I can, that's a basic idea.
Right.
But the nice thing is that, you know, the claim is that you can do these things at room temperature environment, and as Misha emphasized, very much room temperature, you know, with MB centers, I mean, that's a key point, of course. Yeah, and then, of course, you know, the second sort of thing that has really nothing to do with AMO by itself is this idea that Misha actually came up with first was to take an array of these cantilevers and couple them together. I mean, here's this, you know, picture of coupling, for example, cantilever to, say, nitrogen vacancy, and then using somehow the charging, you know, between this. This is sort of a, you know, so cantilever made a magnetic tip, and we sent as a qubit plus microwave, and then having, for example, here in this case, a capacitive cupping. You can also think about using a photon bus by cupping here different cavities together. And then I think the whole thing, this is sort of, I guess, really the first proposal along, you know, that uses nanomechanics now as a data bus to come up with something that's, you know, could be sort of a full-fledged quantum computing proposal, you know. If ideas like this work, I think it would be really great. And I think that ideas along these lines are sort of a driving force again, and provide at least for people like me motivation. So I guess that Misha, did you show this picture or not? I think I don't really want to explain this in much detail. This is this question of this magnetic tip coupling here to this nitrogen vacancy. And I stole this slide from Misha at one point. And sort of this is this picture of then, you know, coupling here, this mechanical conducer by this electrostatic coupling, maybe coupling NB centers that are optically active to some other kind of qubits, like, for example, buckyballs. But I guess it should really Misha talking about these things here. So let me now come back to this first problem and just tell you the basic physics behind the strong coupling between the single atom and the membrane, you know, what I mean, how the story goes. Okay? So as I said before, what we have in mind now is a situation where we have a high Q cavity, we have a single atom inside of a standing light wave, and here's a little membrane, and we have this ratio of these masses, which is now very tiny, and the goal is to go to the regime or achieve a coupling where we have the atom-membrane coupling much larger than all of the dissipation. And then, for example, use this in order to transfer maybe an interesting atomic state of motion that we can easily engineer, you know, over to a cavity, to these nanomechanical systems, and also vice versa. And I have here just a few cartoons that give you the physical ideas. Afterwards, I have a few more theory slides. Actually, theory is not particularly hard, but it's quite tedious to write out all of these things. And I will sort of tell you at the end how these things are done. So let me first give you the qualitative picture behind it. So this is cavity-mediated interaction. Let me take a cavity, and let me assume that I'm shining in the laser light, and I have a membrane which is inside. So if I have a membrane which is inside, of course, this membrane is like an index of refraction. So what it does is, when this membrane moves, for example, back and forth, what it will do is this, that this is my cavity response. I'm sort of detuning my cavity response. So motion of the membrane over here will be reflected in the fact that my detuning or my cavity frequency changes. So if I'm taking, for example, a light over here, which is this red laser light, what I will see is that if I go to the slope of my curve over here, that I will, you know, the membrane motion simply will be reflected in the fact that the light inside, the light intensity will go up and down. So we have sort of a breathing intensity. And you can now see also very clearly where the strong coupling requirements comes from. The steeper my curve is over here, I mean, the higher the intensity modulation that I have over there. So in this sense, the membrane motion is coupled in a very obvious way then to this intensity of this driving force that we have over here. At this point, when you put all of these together, I think it's very clear that if I put an atom inside over here, what this atom will experience will be a coupling where we have displacement of the membrane, but this intensity, you know, will be sort of like breathing like this. It will make a high and low intensities, and so there will be a parametric coupling of this form, The question is now, how do we get, for example, a linear coupling? This is really what we want. So actually getting a parametric coupling in this sense to an atom that would sit in an optical lattice provided by this intercavity field actually would be quite simple. So how does this now go? Well, the answer is simply to use actually now two lasers and also two modes in the following way, that the first laser, you know, makes a first mode, a second one makes a second one, but we're choosing different colors so that actually the optical lattices are displaced from each other. And as a consequence, when you put an atom in here, well, it will be trapped and sort of seeing the combined fields. But when our membrane now over here moves back and forth, you can see that, you know, we have put here one of these frequencies, the red one on the red side, the blue one we put on the blue side of this cavity resonance. So this means while one, for example, you know, when the membrane moves, will go up, the other one will go down. And if you add, of course, these two here together, you will have a moving membrane that essentially will couple to an optical lattice that will move back and forth. So we have here a coupling, which is now linear, and it is a coupling proportional to the finesse. The question is now, of course, and this is sort of the cartoons behind it, that at the end of the day, what you write down is the very obvious Hamiltonian of this oscillator coupled to this atomic motion, the optical lattice, and you have a linear displacement coupling that I wrote down here in the rotating wave approximation. The question is now to make this coupling here large in light of all of these quantum noises, there's damping, temperature, laser heating, and so on, all of this story. So let me now have a few slides then. Well, let me just tell you that here's an illustration. Okay, my claim at the very end will be that if you put in experimental numbers, that this good coupling, you know, this is the strong coherent coupling, can be about a factor of 10 larger in present experiments than all of the dissipation rates that you have over here. So this means that you could do, for example, the following thing. On the side of the atom, this is the this would be a Wigner plot of a squeezed state of motion that is very easy to prepare for in the case of atoms. While you might have a thermal membrane, you know, this is a thermal state in the membrane. And by switching on these kind of interactions, you can swap both. You know? So it means that you can swap squeezing over to the membrane and vice versa. And of course, by the same ideas, you could also, you know, sort of learn about, you know, what the temperature, what the state is of the membrane by simply swapping it over to the atom and using atomic tomography and all of these ideas in order to measure this on this side. Okay, so since I'm a theorist, I'm paid for writing down Hamiltonians and Maxwell equations. I have a few slides to indicate, you know, how these equations actually look. And then show you, you know, these decoherence channels and hopefully convince you that these numbers sort of work out. I will go over these things fast because maybe that's for some of you a little bit boring, but sort of, you know, well, let me do it. Actually, you know, writing down these Hamiltonians is for us something quite simple. We have optomechanical coupling. This is, you know, the number of photons in mode 1 and 2, and you would couple this thing to the displacement of your mirror. This is the kind of physics that I've indicated over here. This is standard radiation pressure. Turns out to be, of course, very small, this standard radiation pressure, but as I said, I mean, the way of doing standard radiation pressure is that you put in a very strong laser field, so this means that you essentially displace these operators by this coherent part alpha, and at the end, you get these kind of quadratic Hamiltonians, where the quadrature components of both of these cavity fields are now coupled to the displacement, okay? So this is the first kind of a coupling, and these are, you know, in this limit of radiation pressure being very weak, so that you have the displacement. These couplings are intrinsically small, but they are enhanced by this alpha that goes in front. Well, the case of the optical lattice is actually very similar. You know, I mean, what does an atom see? An atom sees the sine square, you know, of this first optical potential, and the second one proportional to the number of photons that you have in there. You know, and the depths of this lattice will be given by vacuum Rabi frequencies and so on and so on. So this is an atom sitting in an optical lattice. And again, what you do is this, that, you know, you put in the displacement because you're shining in these very strong light fields here. You displace it. And what's interesting is this, that to zero order, of course, you get now an optical lattice. This is a standard optical lattice physics that we know, but you get the coupling to the cavity mode in the sense of these linear displacements that you have here. These are the quadrature components of the cavity field. And so putting all of these together, we then have here, oops, went the wrong way, sorry. What's happening down here? Okay, sorry. This is time reversal. Okay, so that at the end, you know, you get your optical lattice provides you with the harmonic oscillator for the trapping, but you get the coupling to the cavity fields that, you know, this is the atomic displacement and is coupled to the quadrature components of your cavity fields. by the arrangement that we have done, we've made sure that we get a minus sign over here, which turns out to be important.
So you want to have those two modes and
that's right. That's right, exactly. So one goes up and the other one down, so this lattice sort of, you know, shakes back and forth, and it's coupling to the quadrature component.
How could you actually control this sign, this relative sign?
It has to do with the placement of these things. So you have to put these things in the right spot. And actually, it turns out that this is an experimental complication, but it can be done. And also, this thing works out. So at the very end, you see that the DDY for Hamiltonians that are for a theorist, you know, very trivial. Even I can solve it because it's just coupled harmonic oscillators. And, you know, underlying all of these things will be Gaussian states. The question, of course, is, you know, what are these couplings? So this is this radiation pressure, and this would be the coupling related to these optical potentials. And at the end, what we're really trying to answer is here, you know, do the numbers work out in order to get this strong coupling regime?
So you have three options here.
That's right. That's the point. Exactly. Right. Mm-hmm. So if you do this and you eliminate now the cavity, you go to the bad cavity limit and it turns.
Is there an external trap? Sorry.
No, no, no. This is provided. That's right. This is only provided.
It's a combination.
That's right. It's a combination. That's right. So it's the two optical lattices which together provide you this. But of course, you know, they go like that in terms of intensity. So they shake back and forth. And this gives you this linear coupling. Otherwise, it would be parametric. So it turns out that the good coupling, you know, this is the good part of the story, would be something like this GAM, atomic to membrane coupling, displacement of the atoms, displacement here to the membrane. And it essentially scales, you know, like alpha squared. That's my incident laser light. And then we have this, you know, the radiation pressure coupling divided here by the detuning. So this number will not be very large because these things individually are small. But the question is, you know, can we make this number larger at the very end than, for example, what we have in terms of the cavity damping? Well, okay, so at this point, you start to write down your list of, you know, bad things that can happen. You write down decoherence. There will be decoherence due to cavity decay. And if you start down to write down your requirements, you know, this is cavity decay. This is the tuning that you have. And so, you know, the good part when it was G divided or went like 1 over delta. The bad part is this, that it goes like 1 over delta squared. This will be the cavity decay in this case. And it turns out that if you require a strong coupling, you come to the limit where you would like to be in the dispersive limit. So go relatively far off resonance in order to make this kind of a cavity decay coupling weak relative to the good coupling. So it's like what you do in the case of an atom in an optical lattice. You go very far away from the resonance. Well, then from the days of laser cooling, we know that there will be heating. You know, there will be laser heating in an optical lattice. And again, you write down your story here. This is, you know, coupling here to this Lambda-Dicke parameter squared. Again, you have an inequality. And if you write down this inequality at the end, I'm sort of making a list of inequalities. This was the large detuning limit. You come down to the fact that the famous C parameter for a single atom in a cavity, you know, should be much larger. Well, this quantity by itself actually should be large according to the first inequality. So this is pretty challenging. So to go to the limit where the C parameter, this is this parameter that measures the quality of cavity QED. If you have strong coupling in cavity QED, then this is much larger than 1. You want this to be larger than this quantity, which by itself, as I said before, should be larger. So that's the second requirement that comes out from this heating in the optical lattice. And finally, you get the story that I don't really know much about, but Philip Deutlein solved these things for us, which is this very annoying thing of thermal heating of the membrane, and then talking about the power which is absorbed inside of the membrane, and you have to talk about a thermal link to the outside world. And so if you go through all of these things, it turns out that there's again an inequality that you have to write down, which now contains all of these things like thermal conductivity and so on and so on. So let me just tell you the end of the whole story, which is that, well, if you start to put the numbers like, you know, cesium atom, you have a certain cavity, and you take this standard kind of numbers for membranes that Jeff Kimball has at the moment in the lab. It turns out the bottom line is that you can realize, you know, here couplings of about maybe 45 kilohertz, which for an atomic physicist is a, you know, reasonable number. And all of these other incoherent channels that you have over here are about an order of magnitude smaller. I think that these numbers will get much better as sort of time progresses. Yes, at the moment, yes. Yeah. I mean, it would be nice to rethink these things in terms of these AMO type, you know, levitated setups where, you know, these things could be maybe done at room temperature. Yeah. For what? For the atoms or?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, yes. Uh-huh, yeah, usual story. So let me at the end say a few remarks, a few minutes left, about this free space coupling between nanomechanical mirrors and the atomic ensemble, because this is sort of the ultimate challenge. And as I said before, it doesn't look very likely that one is able to achieve strong coupling. But let me just tell you what the story is. So I first tell you what the story is, then I give you a picture that is very intuitive, but as I said, it turns out to be not entirely correct. And then I give you a quantum version of the whole thing, which is turns out to reproduce the other one. And probably then I'll be running out of time, because I have a few slides where I wanted to teach you something about quantum stochastic Schrodinger equations, but maybe I have to postpone my missionary feelings to some other time. Okay, so what's the basic idea? Well, as I said before, this is somehow symbolic over here. Let me take a laser that comes in, and I do know what Immanuel Bloch and all of these people do so well, but going maybe one generation back and talking about laser cooling inside of an optical lattice. You know, there was this old story that you take a laser, you reflect it from a mirror, then what you build up is a standing light wave. The standing light wave is seen by atoms in here as an optical potential. And of course, nowadays in these experiments, what one does is that one goes with this laser very far off resonance from the excited state, so that all of the dissipative processes are very small, because what you would like to do is a Hubbard model that where atoms are hopping around over here. But let me now look at the situation where we sort of want to engineer a reservoir of atoms. And this reservoir engineering of atoms is laser cooling that we have here, for example, vibrational states in here, in this lattice. And in the old days of laser cooling, what people did so well was that you can essentially, via optical bumping, do laser cooling that you cool all of the atoms down here to the ground state. Don't confuse cooling to the ground state with making a Bose-Einstein condensate, because the temperature, of course, that you get in the standard laser cooling is such that from some fundamental limits, you can never go to quantum degenerate within the first Bloch band, except if you do what's called sub-recoil laser cooling. So this is sort of standard laser cooling over here. And look at this as being a way of engineering a reservoir that essentially cools atoms, and we can switch it on and off. The question is now, do we also get, let me forget about all of these laser cooling stuff over here for the moment, can we also get some coherent coupling between these atoms over here and this mirror? And the answer is, we can, and let me now give you this adiabatic mode argument, which is somehow very elementary and naive. And at the end, it turns out what you get out here is right, but it's actually the wrong physical picture. Then we do it quantum mechanically. So the first approach is this, that, you might simply say, what you do here is this, that you have here field modes that have a boundary condition. This boundary condition is moving. You get the sine wave, that's your standing light wave, and you get this Z displacement from the mechanical oscillator over here. And so what the single atom will see over here, naively, will be just a harmonic oscillator, which, if the mirror moves back and forth, will be just a displaced harmonic oscillator. So let me multiply these things out. You can see that I get a coupling of the position of the atom J to this mechanical motion. And if I do these things for many atoms, I will get, of course, here a sum over these J's. There will be some coefficient in front. Turns out this coefficient actually is pretty tiny, because this coefficient that goes out in front is the oscillation frequency of your atom, which is equal to the one of your membrane over here. So let me take something like maybe 100 kilohertz, maybe a megahertz, something along these lines. So this is the scale of the coupling, but it's multiplied by something which is very small. Why is it very small? Because this is the zero-point mechanical oscillator motion, related to the mass m of your mechanical object. And then this thing is the width, the ground state width that you have over here in this optical lattice, and this simply scales like this mass. So this is 10 to the minus 7. So you can see this coupling by itself is very small. So the only way of getting it large is take a large number of J over here, which simply then, at the very end of the day, multiplies these things by the square root of N, so you want collective enhancement. So at this point, you are writing down in the interaction Hamiltonian, very simple, where you write down an interaction Hamiltonian where the center of mass, this collective motion of the atoms, is coupled here to the mechanical motion, you get this enhancement by N over here. I really want to emphasize that this coupling over here, even though you have square root of N, is still smaller, much smaller than you can get in these cavities where you get these bounces back and forth very often. Now, this picture here turns out gives the right coupling coefficient over here, but it also turns out that you're getting something wrong here in terms of retardation and causality. So let me now make a proper quantum model of this thing here. and put in quantum mechanics for these intermediate light fields. So what you do here is as follows. You know, let me now quantize the light field that I have here as opposed to treating it classically to what I did before in this adiabatic approximation. And then the kind of Hamiltonians that you write down is Hamiltonians like, you know, this is the kinetic energy, this is the motion of your oscillator that you have over here, and this is for the moment now just a one-dimensional model of a radiation field that goes back and forth. This will contain the laser mode, but it will also contain, of course, all of the other modes of the light field. And don't forget that, for example, light that comes in, you know, over here, this mirror, when it's moving, will put little sidebands, you know, onto this laser light. And this is how these atoms over here, you know, dock to this nanomechanical oscillator. Well, then you add, in addition here, the radiation pressure force, this radiation pressure coupling. Essentially, this is just the magnetic energy that you get by displacing the mirror by an amount, which is Cm, that's the displacement over here. So you have to add this bar to the Hamiltonian. And if you are very far off resonance for the atoms, you would also add an atomic bar where you get an optical star shift for these atoms at the position J. And I'm being a little bit sloppy here. Delta, I'm assuming that this electric field is only considered in the very narrow bandwidths around the incident laser light. So it's very nice here. Again, you can see that we're only talking about here quadratic Hamiltonians. This makes life a little bit simpler. But this is actually a very interesting problem from the quantum optical point of view if I rewrite it in a somewhat different form. Yeah? Now, this Hamiltonian here, if I rewrite it in a form where I go to the interaction picture means that I'm eliminating this part over here. And when I do that, and at the same time, I'm writing these operators P minus and P plus that I have over here for the magnetic field and also the electric field E minus E plus out in terms of these operators P daggers and P that I have over here. Now I put in the incident laser field that makes a displacement of these operators here. And then I go to this interaction picture. It turns out that this Hamiltonian up here maps to something which is a Hamiltonian that I can interpret as a Stratonovich quantum stochastic Schrödinger equation with time delays. And actually it has a very intuitive interpretation. It simply means the following. Well, to zero order, we have our mirror over here which is now fixed. Now, what will happen if light comes in? I mean, here are some atoms, and what will these atoms do? Maybe they oscillate back and forth. And these atoms oscillating back and forth, what they will do is that they will write on this incident laser light that comes little sidebands on. So there will be light coming in, and this writing, you know, of little quantum sidebands onto the laser light is reflected, for example, by these operators P and P dagger. These are just the two sidebands that I'm putting onto the laser, and they will be, you know, related to my atomic motion. So the atoms moving will put little quantum noiselets, you know, on these sidebands. But then this thing propagates over here. So at this point, you put sidebands onto this laser light, and then it will be reflected over here. But of course, this mirror will also be moving. And so when this noise comes along, you know, this is these little noiselets that you put, like little noiselets, quantum noiselets on your laser. You know, they know about the atomic motion. This will now interact here with the displacement of the mirror. So we have this thing coming in. You can see these time delays. You know, first this, and then it comes over here, time zero, and then it's being back reflected and goes back out again and interacts again here with the atomic ensemble. And so this is a quantum noise problem where these B and B daggers are, you know, white noise operators. And, you know, and you can see the retardation which is built into the system because you got the noise coming in, first modulated by the atoms, then it sees this thing, and then it comes back and interacts with this thing again. So this is an example of a quantum stochastic Schrödinger equation. It turns out that there's some techniques of converting these things, including these time delays, to master equations. And I guess I don't really have time to tell you the details, but let me just tell you what the bottom line of the story is. Namely, it turns out that when you do all of these things with these retardations here, an interaction emerges, you know, which couples the center of mass of the atoms to the mirror motion. Exactly what we argued before from this simple adiabatic model. But at the same time, you also get all of the quantum noise. And so you can see that we get here shot noise, fluctuations of this radiation pressure over here. So this is the incident shot noise. And we also get atomic noises when you work these things out. So we get the full-fledged, you know, master equation that contains all of these noises. And at this point, you can start to talk about engineering this atomic environment over here in terms of laser cooling and so on, and then getting these master equations here out. Well,
Peter?
Yeah?
Can you just throw out the advanced parts because they seem to violate causality?
I don't throw them out, they actually drop out.
Okay.
Yeah. So when I really integrate my Schrodinger equations, really that I see that, you know, while I have this laser light coming in, here it's modulated, you know, so I can really follow the time evolution along, and it's really this...
So there's time asymmetry in the sense that the advanced ones drop out, but the retarded ones don't?
Well, you know, we always have retarded and not advanced Green's functions.
Yeah.
In my problem, that's exactly how the advanced Green's functions that correspond to the wrong time ordering drop out. And it's exactly this imbalance, you know, retarded versus the advanced that, you know, at the very end gives you this cupping. So this cupping, you know, this cupping arises exactly from this, you know, time delays which are over here. Yeah? So it's a retardation that causes that. And it turns out that it's easy to construct with this adiabatic argument that I gave you before a situation that would give you completely wrong results. I mean, here it's really coming in and you reflect the same way. If you would go out in a different direction, then you could really have one system talk to another one in the unidirectional way. If you do this adiabatic picture, you know, this whole thing is shaking, and you might also conclude that this thing over here talks to the other one down here. So you get actually wrong results. But this quantum picture, you know, gives the right result.
Peter, another question that arises is the potential for reflection from the atomic ensemble back to the mirror.
You mean this thing back here?
Yeah.
Well, in this treatment, this is ignored. Yeah. In practice, of course, if you have a very dense or maybe reflecting cloud, then it should be included. But here it is.
Imagine a limit, right? Where these
this is true. That's right. That's right. And actually, these things are valid in the limit, but this is not the case. You're right. Yes. Okay. So at this point, you can write down all of these things. You get these couplings out again, and we have put in numbers, but it's sort of getting late now. And let me just tell you that. The bottom line of the whole story is, and this is this experiment that Philip Deutlein tries to do at the moment, is that one is at the limit, if you do here laser cooling of these atoms, where one might be able to cool this, maybe not completely to the ground state, but, you know, it would be by itself amusing. It doesn't really compete with the standard optimum mechanical coolings. But I see a lot of interesting quantum optics here in particular, for example. Would be an interesting story to combine these nanomechanical oscillators now, if they can be cooled, you know, maybe in this levitated sense, as I said here before, also with Hubbard models, and then it would be a sort of form of combining Hubbard models with cavity QED, a la nanomechanics, and maybe, you know, getting a whole set of new kind of interactions out within the Hubbard models that could actually be long range. So I had a whole part here now on quantum stochastic Schrodinger equations because I'm so proud to show you these things, but I guess that I'm running out of time, so maybe this is a good point to stop, and let me just go then back to the, see, this is really great things here, as you can see. Well, let me just, okay. I knew that this was too much, okay, so. Did it like Daniel always does it? No? Okay. So let me come to a conclusion. So I mean, I guess there's a lot of interesting physics to be done because it is experimentally accessible in combining solid-state system with AMO systems. Historical for me, the first system that we looked at was the one of these coupling to strip line cavities of polar molecules. Worked again together with Misha. You know, all of these quantum networks, this is more optics. This is what Jeff Kimble and all of the Caltech people, Oscar Painter and Valhalla do, that they have this army of these micro toroids that can serve both as quantum mechanical oscillator as well as high Q cavity, and also the work of Kippenberg. So again, you know, there's realizations of what I said before, again, in this context over here. And I told you before that it seems to be possible to get this strong cupping. There's also these several years old ideas around that I guess Philip Deutlein wants to do of having a BEC coupled to a magnetic little island here on these cantilevers. And maybe at the end, these things are also useful in the sense that one could be maybe using plasmonic ideas, make nanoscale traps for AMO physics. Again, this was worked again. Done together with Misha and Derek Chan. So this is, I think, experimentally, you know, a challenge, but I guess it could be done. The question is, you know, is there sort of beyond these things something that's very unique to these systems. And I believe that for me personally, these ideas with this levitation and making this solid state physics maybe a little bit more atomic physics-like, and at the end doing sort of room temperature optics experiments, you know, in this context. If this could be done, I think it would be great. So thanks very much. Okay, and here are some people who worked on these things in a particular